The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hospital managers have been told by the HSE to implement 7-7 working weeks in hospitals and community services for the next 2 weeks with immediate effect. It's the latest countermeasure that's aimed at stemming the tide of overcrowding in our hospitals. Let's first of all go west and speak to the Chief Clinical Director for the Salta University Hospital Group, Professor Pat Nash. Pat Nash, good morning.
Good morning, Jonathan.
Will you be able to do this 7-7 approach, and what difference will it make?
Well, I think hospitals already work 7 days a week. We have medical consultant staff on call who are in at weekends, every weekends. We are trying to increase the numbers of staff that we have in at weekends to get the better access to diagnostic tests such as X-ray and to therapies such as physiotherapy, occupational therapy. Basically doing everything possible to try and ensure that we minimise any delays for people who are in hospital and try and get them safely discharged as early as possible. But it does require the significant input from both the hospitals and the community. And I think to say that there isn't already 7-7 is incorrect. Definitely we're trying to augment it for the coming weeks to minimise any delays.
I suppose the narrative is that, yes, you are 7-7, as you call it. There's always nurses and there's always NCHDs on call, but consultants are the problem. That's the perception, that they don't work weekends as a rule and that they're the ones who are being brought in. Is that a fair assessment?
No, I, as a consultant myself, I wouldn't agree with that. At weekends, there's consultants on call who come in and do structured rounds, and all patients are seen at weekends. And I think what we're trying to do is augment that. So I think to say that consultants don't come in at weekends is incorrect.
But not all consultants are in at the weekends. And they're entitled to time off, don't get me wrong. But, you know, we need more rather than just the on-call system, which perhaps isn't running at full tilt.
Sure. Well, I think it's about access to tests and access to treatments that aren't typically available at weekends. These are the factors that delay patients' discharge, not waiting to see a consultant. I think if you here in Galway, if you come in tomorrow, you'll see lots of consultants in rounding seeing their patients, and you see all other staff in as well. And we're trying to augment that to try and ensure that we over the next month that we can prevent and minimise any delays for patients at all possible, because I think we're expecting the numbers have eased a little bit in the last couple of days, but we're expecting sustained pressure for the coming weeks, which particularly related to flu, but also COVID and RSV.
One of the things you did mention there was it's a community effort as well as a hospital effort. It's all very well for members of the community in hospital say you're good enough for discharge now, but we've nowhere to send you, Pat. And as a result, that person cannot be safely discharged from hospital. So you can have as many consultants work in the wards as you'd like. But if there's nowhere for those people to go into respite accommodation or nursing home or into community care where they have got home helps coming in to make sure that they're okay, you can't discharge those people.
No, and I think that's always been a problem. Trying to discharge people at weekends who have complex care needs is very, very challenging. And we are working with the community to try and ensure that we can get as much 7-7 and try and get more discharges of the complex discharges for patients who require significant support. I mean, I think the other thing to make it clear is we have significant capacity issues. We've an increasing population. They're an ageing population. Their healthcare needs are increasingly complex. And we do need additional bed capacity. And it's something we've been pushing and will continue to push right across all our hospitals in the Salta group. That takes time. For this coming winter, we need to try and do the best we can to try and minimise the delays and try and so ensure that patients aren't waiting unnecessarily on trolleys. But I think to say that it is definitely a capacity issue, and we do need additional beds in the system. And I think that's one of my clear focuses is to push for additional capacity going forward.
Pat, I know I'm taking that you're the Chief Clinical Director and you're a professor, so you're not fresh out of college. So that means you've been working in the system for a couple of years. How many extra beds have you had in, say, Galway University Hospital in that time? We're told it was 1,000 extra beds, but if you look at the global count of beds, we're at the same point we are nearly 30 years ago. If there are extra beds, where have they gone?
Well, in Galway, we've had practically no extra beds, and if you go relate back to between 2019 and the current and 2023 now, we did a bed capacity analysis in 2019, and for Galway, we need 222 additional beds by 2030. And we're nearly halfway there, and we haven't got any of those so far. So I think it's clear, and similarly in other hospitals across our region, there is a requirement of between 50 and 100 beds in most of the hospitals. So the additional capacity we've got in the west and the northwest of Ireland is minimal over the last 5 years.
Okay, but why hasn't that happened? Because you've identified the need. You have got people on trolleys, you've got staff who are burning out, you've got medics who are becoming incredibly frustrated that they can't do what they signed up to do, regardless of how much they're being paid or what they want to do with their careers. None of this works if you don't have the beds to treat patients. So if you've asked for it and it hasn't been delivered, whose fault is it?
Well, I mean, large infrastructure developments have to go through a public spending code. It's a complex code, with multiple stages. It takes a long time. So in principle, there is approval for additional beds in Galway, but it's going to take many years to get through the various stages to get a building new beds open in Galway and right across the region as well, in all the hospitals in the region. So while I think the infrastructure development is very, very slow and challenging to try and implement in a timely fashion.
Yeah, but the point is that everybody suffers while that goes on, and the need has been identified. How are your colleagues feeling, Pat Nash, having to deal with all of this, and consultants maybe taking some of the blame for not working weekends, even though you're telling me that they are there, and everybody's pointing fingers, but nobody's pointing fingers where the problem really lies, which is the lack of infrastructure, and we all know who is ultimately responsible for that.
Sure, people are under pressure, and nobody wants to see any patient waiting on a trolley for a bed. It's very hard to give them the optimal care when they're not in the appropriate environment, and it is stressful for everyone working in the system. But I think everyone's focus is on the patients and what we can do to try and minimise the delays for them. And I think I can assure you that everybody in the hospital system here is doing everything they can to try and prevent any delays for patients and prolong times on trolleys.
What do you say, though, to the people right now who are down in that lovely new emergency department that you have in University Hospital Galway, who are still stuck on trolleys, who are still awaiting admission? Some of them will have been stuck on chairs. Some of them will feel very, very bad towards the care that they're receiving today, regardless of the efforts of the staff. What do you say to them?
Sure. Well, I mean, I look after them as well. I apologise. I mean, I don't want to see anyone waiting, and in my day-to-day clinical role, I'm treating them and doing the best we can. But in my management role, what I'm advocating as strongly as I can for additional capacity in the system so that nobody has to wait on a trolley for any period of time.
All right. We'll leave it there for now. Professor Pat Nash, Chief Clinical Director for the Sale at the University Hospital Group and a consultant in Galway University Hospital. It is overcrowded there as well. There's no denying that. The problem is it going to get any better? By the sounds of it, no. What about the National Ambulance Service? That was the question we were asking this morning about what impact is it having on them? It's difficult to talk to paramedics because they're rather busy, but we can talk to David Hall, who's the CEO of Lifeline Ambulance Service, the private ambulance service. David, good morning.
Good morning, Jonathan.
You normally provide services to the HSE whereby you will move patients intra-hospital, as they call it. You're normally not called in for blue light emergencies, but have you been asked to do a little bit more in the current circumstance?
Yeah, John, we would have a contract with the HSE for moving patients into hospital for tests and for procedures and for discharges, which we would do on a daily basis with, roughly 35 ambulances each day would be dedicated to moving public patients. Since October, the National Ambulance Service, for the first time in 20 years, to be fair to them, got ahead of the curve in relation to the winter initiative and pre-booked myself as Lifeline Ambulance and other colleagues, other competitors of mine, to pre-book ambulances to help with discharges. They haven't deployed those ambulances in the context of emergency ambulances. They seem to have a technical or a philosophical issue with discharging emergency calls to private ambulance companies, despite us having the same insurance, license, qualification, and technical ability. For some reason, they want to keep that in-house despite it gambling with lives. That's a historical issue. I still don't understand why they do it. But they have pre-booked us until the end of March to help them with the winter initiative. And they did, in fairness to them, get it organised in October to have additional capacity for discharges. As Dr. Nash said, you know, discharges happen. And I heard the interim CEO, Stephen Mulvaney, comment yesterday that, you know, discharges don't happen ordinarily on a Saturday and Sunday because of the knock-on effect of diagnostics. So there's a heavy emphasis on those ambulance transfers on a Monday to Friday basis. We have a peculiar health service, and you've highlighted, as many commentators highlighted for the last 20 years, all the various inadequacies and challenges that we have. And, you know, I always remember back to the 48-hour period when we were able to draft 298 pages of legislation to give our banks €64 billion. But we still have a long, long, long process of 4 years to get planning for a hospital to save lives.
In all the years that you've been observing this, David, because your ambulance has been around, your ambulance service has been around a while, has it ever been this bad, do you think? And I know you speak to paramedics and you do all the time talk to these people. What is it like on the ground for the people who are having to try and help those, can't even get them into the emergency department, having blue lighted them there?
Well, I've never seen it as bad, and it's an anecdote. Many people say regularly that it's never been as bad, and this is a crisis, and all the various adjectives that are used to describe it. But I'll tell you one thing, Jonathan. The health service in Ireland and the public are very, very lucky in one respect, that we have such a dedicated healthcare staff, and that is in relation to the ambulance service. Because many of the ambulance service will huff and puff, as I will huff and puff and give out. But it's a remarkable system that then galvanises 1 minute after giving out to treat and ensure patients get treated. And the stress, I don't think it's very, very difficult for people to have seen what happened over Christmas, where emergency departments were never as at capacity as they've ever been before, where hospital staff and paramedic staff and ambulance staff, to the length and breadth of the country, have been under immense pressure, right on the cusp of COVID, which everybody was at full tilt during COVID, looking after patients and dealing with a very, very dangerous virus that was very risk to themselves and their family and communities. So I think we're very, very lucky that we have such a dedicated, you know, very professional and very caring staff who, amongst all of the chaos that's going on around them, all of the difficulty, and the public recognise that, that's probably why there hasn't been such much more greater uproar in the emergency departments and around the hospitals. The team work together collectively, both public and private, and we're seeing that collectively at the moment. Everyone will huff and puff and give out, but it's remarkable what's happened in the last number of weeks, because this will be a lot, lot worse, Jonathan. And there is more to come. There is worse to come. Like, you know, we had to change our entire rosters over Christmas, where normally I would have a very, very low level of activity over Christmas, but I had to not have staff on leave over Christmas, as was the challenge that the HSE required assistance, and we had to step up as to help with them. And that needs to happen. People need to, having a conversation over 7/7, when you just take a step back and have a look at it, is a bit odd. It's a bit embarrassing in a health service where there's actually a conversation from the HSE about 7/7 when they're managing and running the health service. It is remarkable
Pat Nash made that point. It is 7/7 anyway, but it's just maybe there are pinch points where it could be a little bit easier. David, you run a private business, okay? So if you can't pay your bills, you shut up shop. You close, you go away and with your tail between your legs. But you're looking and dealing with a service where no one is in any way accountable for budgetary overspends. No one seems to be accountable for the issues that we're dealing with right now. No one seems to be accountable for winter plans that land a week before the crisis hits. Can you reconcile that in your experience, why nobody seems to be willing to take responsibility in the way that you would have to in the private sector?
But like, who's in charge? Like, I'm in charge of my business, my company. It's my responsibility. I have 162 staff. I have 50 ambulances. I move 20,000 patients a year and do 3.2 million kilometres a year. That's my responsibility, my job. I get paid for it. I make no apologies for being a commercial entity and charging for that service and providing a professional service. I'm dealing with the HSE for the last 22 years. And I would safely say that I had a meeting with the HSE on the 12th of March last year, and I'll never forget it. And I just realised at that moment in time, on the 12th of March at 9:30, I was at home doing a Zoom call, and I sort of looked and said, I'm wasting my time. I'm wasting my time trying to engage with a non-commercially structured entity that is too big, has too much money, and isn't spending it right. And as I say, it's full of excellent, excellent people. The most tragic part about this, Jonathan, really the most tragic part about this, is that all of the commentary that's been going on all week, and the elephant in the room is paying staff. Like, we're losing nursing staff, brilliant nursing staff, to Australia. We're having this socialist conversation around not paying doctors and consultants enough money whereby we're happy to wait for 2 and 3 years on a waiting list rather than waiting for 2 or 3 months. So there's a whole disparity of conversations. But who is in charge? Is Minister Donnelly in charge? Are the opposition in charge? Is the HSE in charge? Like, ultimately, the politicians have been on holidays the last few weeks as well. It's clear they're not in charge. And therefore, if the HSE is in charge, there is a defined structure that's there. And I think Stephen Mulvaney's done an excellent job. And I know Stephen Mulvaney, you know, internally talking to a number of the HSE staff, that Stephen Mulvaney left no uncertain terms that the level of preparation that was done for this winter plan most certainly is much better than any other winter plan. Yes, he's very unlucky with COVID, with the flu and with RSV, but 110%, there's a clear calculated effort was made to try and counter this. And I think the HSE needs some recognition that they did make some significant effort to do this, because this would be, without the staff dedication, professionalism, caring that exists at the moment, and without the preparation that was done, this would be a lot more to worse. The bigger question you asked earlier on is a very simple question: is where's the infrastructure? Where's the beds? This rubbish and waffle, gobbledygook, waffle, and all this rubbish that's been going on for 20 years. It's a very simple academic exercise. No one needs to be a brain surgeon to understand. Need more staff, pay them better, mind them better, more beds.
David Hall, CEO of Lifeline Ambulance, thank you very much for joining us. I mean, if you strip it away, and that's what we've been trying to do for the last couple of days. I mean, you can hear as many stories of people stuck on chairs or sitting on trolleys, and look at the news last night and see that undercover footage. That's just terrifying. I mean, if anything happened in any of those corridors where you had to evacuate those sick people, many of them immobile quickly, we would have a serious problem. And we can talk about consultants working 7/7. We can talk about whether or not we need more radiotherapy at the weekends. We can go on forever and ever and ever. But ultimately, at the end of the day, this is about infrastructure. It's about the city that I'm in here in Cork needing an elective hospital that they've talked about for the last 15 years. It's still not built. At the planning commission for it, but not building it. If you look at Dublin, they need one. They need one in Galway. They definitely need one in Limerick. But they're not building them. Why they're not building them? Well, because they tried to build a hospital in Dublin, a children's hospital, and it ran massively over budget, and they're terrified it's going to happen again. And that fear is preventing them from actually dealing with what is a very real crisis. We need beds. And the point is about the budget, and a texter makes this point very, very well. Let's just read that text. Where's the money going? We are one of the highest spending countries in the world per capita. Our health budget spending is up by something like 4 billion in the last few years. That's from Fintan. And Fintan had to look up the figures. You're right. In 2016, we spent 20 billion. In 2022, we spent 23.4 billion. So round near 3.5 billion extra gone in without a single bed open to show for it. The population is aging. The population is growing. We're not increasing beds and we're wondering why we're stuck in this mess. Other texters, Michael got in contact. Good morning, Michael. Why is heaven and earth not being moved to sort out our health issues? Set up a committee like what was done for COVID at regular updates to get Ireland out of this health crisis once and for all. We can set up 10 committees, but they'll still not find out who's in charge and who's responsible for not building hospitals and increasing capacity. One cannot make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, says a texter. Beds reduced in recessions never replaced what our population grew. Staff kept on temporary contracts to save on pension rights. Carers paid at or below the minimum wage for doing work few would stick at. The health service is reaping what its managers sowed over many years, and non-accountability is rife. And one more on this. There's been exponential growth in private beds, and most consultants have a private practice too. Perhaps that's why they are under pressure. It's government policy to privatise healthcare, so pointless asking for an increase in public bed capacity, because that is not in their sights. We have a two-tier system. We've always had a two-tier system. But yes, they've increased the number of beds in the private system to, guess what? Meet demand. The demand that was going to be there for that model of healthcare, whether you like it or not. What do we do in the public system? Sweet F.A. in terms of putting new beds in. They can talk about 900 new beds, but they were only replacing beds that they took out of the system a decade ago. Ask me where the logic is in that and why we're talking about the problem now.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.